Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
All my life I felt alien. Till today I feel alien. And I don't think that is something because of other people. I think that's something within myself. I just never thought I would fit in. I love my animals. I really love my animals. I really like the fact that I can take something that is so young and has no parents and bring it to life and send it on its way to a home where it can be even loved even more and cared even more. I believe God is a female, not a male, if there is a God. And I think it would be Beyonce up there. Something's happening up there. I call myself a theater maker, and I hope that one day have an award for these things. I'd like to be known as the, you know, the gay bald Arab who did all these stunts. So that'd be fantastic. Oh, you know, what's his name? Oh, you know, the bald one, he's gay, he's from Iraq.
This is In My Country, stories of people who came to Australia as refugees or asylum seekers and the many places we call home.
Hosted by Adam Wood and me, Pia Perversi-Birchall. This podcast was produced on Turrbal and Yuggera country. We pay our respects to traditional owners, past, present and emerging.
Let me just tell you, the stories you're about to hear need some kind of sedative. I'm not saying anything drastic, maybe a glass of wine, maybe some tea with something special in it, or a coffee with something really special in it. But you need to sit back, have something soothing, because it's going to be a nice ride.
Big-hearted, lover of animals, seeker of self, storyteller, artist, and creative. Iago is all of these and so much more. Iago was born in Iraq and spent his adolescent years in Saudi Arabia. Despite intense pressure to conform, Iago has strived to express himself, his true self, his whole life. He's faced obstacles that would have pushed others over the edge. Instead, he's turned to the arts and his extraordinary resourcefulness to create a different life. In this episode, Adam and I talk to Iago about his journey against incredible odds and his search for peace and a place to belong. Even though he's now in Australia, Iago is still living with threats and fear. And for that reason, we've used a pseudonym. Iago is not his real name. And if you've been digging around in your memory banks trying to remember where you know that name from, let me help you out. He's the loud-mouthed Macaw from Aladdin. Iago thought this was a good option. One, for the Arab references, and two, because it reminds him of his own lovingly dubbed stupid anxious birds. We've also removed or changed all identifying details to protect Iago's identity, including adding a voice distortion. It's not as easy to listen to as Iago's natural voice. So to make it more digestible, we've broken the story into two parts. This is part one. We met with Iago in his home in the suburbs, where he cooked us a lavish Iraqi feast and introduced us to his myriad pets.
We've got Grizzly the terrier.
Yeah, he's a Lhasa Apso. And Jasper is an Alaskan Malamute.
And the cockatiel,
Markla. And Yara the Macaw. And Cupid the Pearly Cornea. And Jeffrey the Canary. And I have three chickens. Grace Jones, Shakira, and Cher.
You have a story to tell.
Oh, yeah.
You were born in Iraq
on
a particularly a day that was celebrated in Iraq. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and about your family?
Yes. So my mother is Saudi Arabian and my father is Iraqi. And I was born on the 28th of April on Saddam Hussein's birthday. Fantastic dictator of our time. And what's funny is that Saddam Hussein put a massive ban on anyone using sugar and flour to make or bake cakes. And that was because of, well, the situation of the country economically after the war, etc.
Saddam Hussein came to power in Iraq in 1979 and ruled until the 9th of April 2003. To say that his dictatorship was brutal is a massive understatement. He and his government were responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths in both Iraq and in neighbouring countries, not to mention torture and disappearances. Ultimately, in 2006, he was charged and executed for crimes against humanity.
And yet, his birthday was the only day where it was just massively celebrated. So whenever my birthday came along, my mum used to take me into the backyard and all these fireworks would happen. She'd be like, look, I did all of this for you. And, just, and I'm like, oh, did you? And I was so gullible as a young kid. And grew up telling everyone, mum organized fireworks every birthday, every single birthday, that we used to go in the backyard and we used to just watch them. Very bizarre, because till today, if you meet any Iraqi who has lived during those times and you tell them 28th of April and they just go like, oh, yeah, Saddam Hussein's birthday. Because nobody else was allowed to have cakes and candles and fireworks but him.
Iago's parents met, married and had their two children in Iraq. His mother had moved to Iraq as a child when her father had fled Saudi Arabia as a refugee due to his political activism.
It was a political asylum, and that's how my mom ended up in Iraq.
Iago lived in Iraq, in Baghdad, until he was 7.
There isn't much of a difference between where I lived in Baghdad and what Lismore looks like. The first time I went to Lismore, and it was with mum, and she was visiting me, and we were driving through, and I'm like, mum, doesn't look like Baghdad. You know, it's so interesting. You know, the greenery, the hills, there was a bridge over a river or a creek or something. And I was just, it was quite mesmerizing to feel so far away from where you are, but feel so close to what you're from. People can drink and have alcohol. It was very much like being here, maybe I would say, 70s. You know, if I look at documentaries of Australian 70s, it looked very much like it. And people were free to do as they please.
And what would the kids do for fun?
Fun was, football, the grass, neighbors' kids. And in front of our house was a train track. And the train rarely used to come through. So once a year in spring, there would be this massive plague of lady beetles, little red lady beetles. So all the kids would go and collect all these lady beetles and put them in their own garden. And the one who collected the most wins. And what do you win? Oh, you win a mango. That was the fun then.
Yep.
That was what it was. Mum would send me to the neighbors and she would not even walk with me at the front. She would just stand and she'll just watch. And this is like at night, 6 p.m., because it was so safe. It was so safe because people were in so much fear of war. They've had enough of war. They've had enough of all of that. So when it came to safety for each other, people looked after each other a lot. And it was illegal for us to have, because of Saddam, to have satellite TV. So it was just two channels. But my mum had a VCR, and the only cartoon we had was Aladdin. And Aladdin, I played Aladdin over and over and over and over so many times. I thought that was the only cartoon ever made.
But you mentioned at the age of 7, your family decided to make a change. What was that change, and why did they decide to do it?
Well, you know, my parents are doctors and they could barely make any money.
During the 90s, doctors' salaries fell from around $3,000 a month to as low as $2 a month. Many inevitably left Iraq because they were unable to sustain themselves, Iago's parents included. Iago's mother had returned to Saudi Arabia to visit her sick mum, and not long after, his dad decided to bring the kids and join her.
You know, there are no taxes, you can work and make good money, there are good schools, so there was a lot more opportunity there. So he called mum and he said, don't come back, we're leaving.
They crossed the border to Jordan, but visa issues became complicated and they ended up stuck there for 2.5 years. Iago was caught in between, while his mum waited in Saudi Arabia.
I never had a very good relationship with my dad. I had a very good relationship with my mum. So when I, you know, didn't have mum for 2.5 years while being in Jordan, it sort of broke the relationship that I had with my mum. Especially, you know, that's a very fragile age where you need your mum's affection. You need that maternal thing. And, you know, my dad was just never interested.
Iago, his dad and his sister finally arrived in Saudi Arabia in 2001.
In the country that I grew up in, Saudi Arabia, you can't walk outside without having looks and wonders whether people are going to harm you or get you for who you are, which is gay. At that point, I was 10 years old, and that was the shock of my life. Then we get on the plane, fly to Saudi Arabia, and the plane doors would open, and this incredible heat just takes over you and really shocks you. Heat and humidity all at once. Within minutes, I was just wet, and walked down this this escalator thing from the airplane, get into the airport, and everybody is dressed in white and black. The men are in white and the women are in black. And it was so weird. It was so bizarre. And I was so excited to see mom. And we get to the point where we're meeting everyone. And I saw mom and she was dressed in black. And then look over at my sister. She's dressed in black. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? Anyways, I ran to hug mom and she couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was worried that would be an issue for this, you know, the Saudi police, the religious police, that she's going to be hugged by a boy, even though it's her son. So it was difficult for her as well. It was a very brief hug. It's sort of a, you know, away. Then we got in the car and got home. And as we're driving, I just look right and I look left and it's gray and brown. It was prison. It was really, I mean, if you know, what's it called? Mad Max? It looks like that. It's just brown and orange. You know, there's no life whatsoever. It shocked us all.
Soon after arriving in Saudi Arabia, Iago was enrolled in an international school, but he struggled to fit in.
I realized that I'm not enjoying my classes. I'm not enjoying the studies. I'm not enjoying math. I'm not enjoying science. I'm not enjoying anything. And I'm not enjoying it because I did not feel that there was a purpose to achieving anything there, because anything you achieve ends up as nothing. If you went and got great, wonderful grades and wonderful results, I'm still in a desert. I'm still in a prison. I'm still in the middle of nowhere. It's not going to make me any happier. Until one day, when we finally moved to another house, and I think I was 15, and I had my own room. At that point, I had a key, and I could lock the door in my room, finally.
Behind the safety of a locked door in his own room, Iago was finally able to explore his creative side.
And that was the time where I started experimenting with photography, music, videography, all sorts of different sorts of stuff, as makeup, costuming and all that, and used to all hide it all under the bed or in the closet or anything, because if my parents found it, they would think, oh, what is he doing? You know, is he selling himself online? They don't put two and two together that he's being creative. They would just go to the worst thing straight away. So And it moved on to me actually doing music videos just for the sake of doing something and putting something on YouTube, because there's the internet there now. Now, okay, so there's the internet, but everything is censored on the internet. So we used to go and get this, you know, VPN thing and access the internet through the US and then be able to get into YouTube and then so and so.
If you think back to that time, what do you think was driving you to create these videos and to upload them onto YouTube?
I wanted to communicate. And I think that's what it was. I wanted to communicate what's inside me that I could not say out loud to anybody else. I wanted to express something that is taboo, you know, that is not acceptable in Saudi Arabia. So YouTube, nobody could tell me no, you know, and nobody could say you can't do that. And that was the outlet. And also the fact that of living within four walls and being so restricted to what you can do actually pushes your creativity even further. The more you limit yourself, I believe, the more you limit yourself and the more you try to simplify your artwork, the more creative it becomes, because it becomes small but tells a massive story. What drove me truly is that you're just trapped all the time. And then there was that encouragement from all these people. Oh, you should put up more videos. Mm-hmm. Oh, you should try this. Oh, go buy a wig. I'm like, where can I buy a wig here? You know what I mean?
Iago's desire to express himself in private was rooted in a growing awareness that he was different.
Tell us about the process of coming to terms with your sexuality in a country like Saudi Arabia.
Well, so... okay, so you're force-fed religion, right? Let me explain this to you. So there are five prayers a day, right? Every time a prayer would happen, businesses are not allowed to be open during prayer time. Five times a day, right? So everything around me says that, you know, gay people should be stoned. Gay people should die. Oh, you know, fags this, fags that. Sorry for swearing, but you know.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There is nothing in that world that tells you it's okay. If you're gay, you should be in a coffin. That's it. It's as simple as that.
The government of Saudi Arabia does not recognise the rights of its LGBTQ+ citizens. Anyone who is seen to sit outside of hetero or cisgendered norms can be punished with anything from whippings and beatings to execution and life in prison.
So, and I remember one night I was in bed and I was 11. It was two nights before my birthday and I was in absolute tears because it hit me. And I realized that I have no attraction to women whatsoever, and that I am gay, and that I can't be gay because that means I'm gonna die. And I was, you know, I was just mortified, and I was angry. I was, you know, at that time I believed in God. I don't anymore, and I was angry with God. I was very upset. You know, why would you do that? Why would you make me gay and then put me in a place where I can die for it? And a lot of people will argue, oh, it's a choice, blah, 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 go fuck yourself. That's not true. It's not a choice. Because if it was a choice, I wouldn't be here and I would not have a shitty relationship with my family. I would have chosen to be there and I would have chosen to be with a woman and I would have had kids, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that night and I got out of bed and I looked at myself in the mirror and I just said, it's live or die. You're just going to have to be what you are. And I can't believe that I said that to myself at 11 years old.
Mm.
Like, what 11-year-old has to be put through so much to say that to them, to themselves? You know, I can't go and tell my mom. I can't go and tell my best friend. I can't go and tell my sister. It's, you are alone. And you are on your own. And you've got nobody else that is in a similar situation. Or they could be, but they would never tell you. You get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Because what's the fear? What's the fear that they're feeling?
Fear is death.
Yeah.
The fear is death. The fear is that if it's not death, it's going to be torture. You're going to be stoned, or you're going to be hung, or your head's going to be chopped off, or, you know, or you're going to go into conversion therapy where they put you into like, you know, Muslim schools where you gotta pray and pray and pray and pray and pray and pray until your teeth fall off. I mean, it's phenomenal how far it goes.
So how does a teenage boy living in Saudi Arabia who's coming to terms with his sexuality, how does he explore that?
Yeah.
You talked about having finally a locked room, so I imagine that would have been very, very helpful at that time. But
yeah.
How did you explore your sexuality at that time?
The internet was a great place, you know, to speak to anonymous other gay people in Saudi Arabia. And the internet opened this massive world of acceptance.
Where did you find them? Like chat rooms?
Chat rooms. Yahoo chat rooms. That's what it was at the time. And I started speaking to people in Australia. One of the first people I spoke to, who I met when I came to Australia, I started speaking to him online when I was 14. You know, he helped me accept what I am. He helped me understand that being gay isn't actually a bad thing. He helped me understand that it's only where I am. It's not the whole world. But when you are there, that it feels like this is the whole world. And when you don't feel like you can leave, well, then you can't leave. You're trapped. You are in prison. So if it wasn't for him, I think I wouldn't be here right now talking to you because there was nothing to live for.
Despite the huge benefits of connecting with others online, the internet also wasn't necessarily a safe place.
What scared me was that So there are guys who are not gay who go in the chat rooms to try to catch other guys. And through that, they would make money. So let me just explain it. If you're gay, it's just like being here and cooking crack in your kitchen. So if you have a lead for someone who's cooking crack in their kitchen doing something illegal, the police would really appreciate that. I'm not sure if they're going to give you money, but, you know, over there, if you catch a gay guy, you get money. So in many, many situations it happened with people that I have known where they go to meet somebody and, you know, it needs to be in secret so they can't meet in public. They have to go to either his house or the other person's house. And then they go in there, everything's fine. And then there you go, there's police right there at the door. And he would say, I have all this proof, we've been chatting, you know, 10 grand, thank you. So there's a lot of danger in that.
Iago felt trapped, both in his sexuality and creatively.
I reached a point at 16 years of age, I wanted to go and study in Lebanon.
What kind of things were you passionate about? What kind of things did you want to kind of focus on learning more about?
It started, I really wanted to do photography, and then I realized that I actually do have a talent when it comes to being on stage and putting something together on stage. So the first thing I wanted to do was learn music.
Without telling his parents, he was applying for summer study programs in Lebanon.
So why didn't you tell them? Why was it a secret?
They made things difficult. My parents made things difficult. I shouldn't say my parents. My dad. My dad made things difficult. And he never believed I deserved many things that I got. And I never forget him saying this to me. Oh, you think you're going to go overseas and study and you think I'm going to support you? You're not worth it. You're just going to go to any school here. And that's it. And I just chose not to accept that. Because I just thought, this guy is against everything I do. So whatever I want to do, I'm just going to have to lie and get it done.
But again, getting a visa became an issue.
And I would get rejected over and over and I would apply over and over and over.
Luck struck when his family took him to Lebanon on holiday. He secretly enrolled himself in the theatre school for the summer.
You would learn directing, you would learn acting, and then you get a choice of three different types of dancing, etc. And then the next summer, you would come back and you would be at a next level. So 2 weeks, everything was great. And then Israel goes, oh, I'm just going to bomb Lebanon today. And war broke out. And I'm just like, oh God, what am I going to do?
While Iago's parents started the complicated journey to get out via Syria, he convinced them to let him stay behind.
I just said, oh, I'm just going to stay for, you know, 3 more weeks here with my friend. Is that okay? You know, I'm just going to stay at his house. My friend was my boyfriend at the time, who I was in an online relationship with before I went to Lebanon. So it was quite a big lie, actually. I'm just thinking about it.
Just a little one?
Yeah. It's a big lie.
After returning from Lebanon, things shifted.
I was 17 at that point.
A friend of a friend introduced him to a gay scene that opened up his world.
I could not believe my eyes. There were gay people everywhere.
The scene was alive. In the centre were some very powerful and prominent Saudis. Iago is still afraid to name them for fear of serious consequences. So suffice to say, they were above the law.
If you're with them, you're safe, you know.
He got his invitation to the first party through the friend of a friend. The host of that party in particular seemed untouchable.
Because no police is going to come and try to mess up. They know that that house belongs to this so-and-so. So if they're having a massive party and they might have alcohol in there and people are smoking weed and stuff, we're not going to go there because he can do whatever he wants. And it drove me insane because here's this person who is doing everything that is not okay by the eyes, you know, in the eyes of the law, but it's okay for them and everybody else has to suffer. They were drag queens. They were, you know, all sorts of stuff. Everything that I could not even see or believe that exists, existed in that house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking vodka, wine, all sorts of stuff, you know. Like, it baffled me. There was a DJ. And really, till today, I'm just like, what the hell's going on? And through that, I discovered that they have these desert parties where they go in the middle of the desert, tents and whatever, and they have these extravagant parties, like it's 1001 nights, you know? And camels and fire pits and belly dancers and just so over the top because they have so much money and they are so untouchable as well. And that's how I started meeting all these other gay people. And I think if it wasn't for those who actually, you know, do and organize these things, I wouldn't be as comfortable with myself because I got to see so many other people. And if you can imagine that if you were born, you know, blue and everybody else is white, you're just going to be like, oh, I'm so weird, until you go and meet another person who's blue. It just that's how it works.
Through the party scene, he met someone from the inner circle.
God, he was good looking. Like, he was really good looking. It was just, you know, there's good looking, and then there's like good looking where it makes you want to vomit. It's just like ridiculous. You know, if there's a God, God spent good 5 minutes doing nothing else but creating him, I tell you. But he was a really nice guy. He was, I was 17 and he was 24, and he was so cultured and, you know, well-traveled, and because, of course, you know, we have that money. So, and it's quite a romantic story because he was eyeing me out from, like, through the crowd, and I'm like, oh, God, you know, he was really pretty. He's probably thinking I'm just a one-night thing and I don't want it. Next thing I know, this other person comes and talks to me, and he says, oh, what's your name, blah, 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 and I'm like, oh, you know, so-and-so. He's like, oh, well, would you mind walking with me? So-and-so wants to talk to you, and I'm like, who? And he's like, oh, that gentleman over there, I work for him. He wants to talk to you. So I said to him, I said, well, he can come here. You know? And the guy just looked at me and he's like, do you know who he is? And I'm like, well, I don't care. He wants to talk to me. He needs to come here. And I think he really liked that. So he came over and talked to me. And I don't believe in love at first sight, but I really liked the guy. And he was really respectful. And even though he was privileged, he was humble. And never have I, in the years that I've known him, he has never, ever been full of himself, ever. So we ended up talking more and more. And then, you know, Mum would be saying, oh, you know, what's this black car downstairs? And there's like three other cars, security and all that. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know who that is. So I would call him, because luckily we had cell phones. So I would call him and I would just be like, I think you need to drive away. Mum's getting suspicious. And he's like, oh, okay. So he drives away. And of course, he drives away and three other cars follow him. Mum goes to work. And then all the other cars come back and I would come down, get in the car, and we would go somewhere. And we would go to a restaurant. And it was just so fantastic because we'd go in a restaurant and there is nobody else in the restaurant. They opened the restaurant just for us, you know. And it created that world of privacy and that openness where I can actually date and hold hands and nobody would say anything because, you know, so-and-so is there, you know. That's his boy. Don't talk to his boy, you know, sort of thing. Yep. It was just great. And I think we were together for about a year and a half or something.
But the boyfriend had immense pressure to marry and have kids.
And I felt terrible for him because as much as he had money, power, freedom, he still couldn't get to be and want to be and do what he wanted to do, which is be himself and live his life. So, yeah, unfortunately for him. And we stayed friends. We are still friends. Unfortunately, the story takes a turn to the worse a bit. I get a phone call one day and he's like, I know your name. I know you're gay. And I was just like, who's this guy on the phone? I actually have no idea who this is. And then he said, I'm a police officer. I know you're gay. I'm going to arrest you if you don't actually do what I'm telling you. Well, went and met with him. Because I got scared at that point. And then he laid it as clear as the sun for me. If you don't do what I say, I'm going to arrest you. And you know what I'm going to arrest you for. And you know how that's going to end. So it would be good for you if you just do what I say.
That's the end of part one. Join us for part two of Iago to hear the rest of his story. We think these are important conversations to be having and we'd love you to join in. Find us on Facebook or Instagram at In My Country Podcast.
If you like what you've heard, please tell your friends and rate us on your podcasting app or wherever you're listening. It helps us to be heard by more people.
This podcast was produced and edited by Adam Wood and Pia Perversi-Birchall.
Sound is mixed by David Gaylard. All of our music is from Free Music Archive. You can find full credits in the show notes or at inmycountrypodcast.com. Thanks for listening.